don't want your fancy life-changing career starting moving out of my parents' house college education.
Technically, it's time for the Rink Rats with Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
The bigger they are, the harder they fall. The bigger the heart, the harder they ball. Crossover pull-up, switching the tail off. All of you slam dunk. Playoffs,
hello.
Watch Jesse get your game on playoff.
If you're ready for the playoffs, say yeah. The world.
I was going to go somewhere different. Hello, Token on the track.
Oh, no. This is the... I give Token the day off on Friday, so I use someone else's beats.
Doesn't matter. He still intro'd us. He still said the words.
That's fair.
That's what I'm going with. It is technically Rink Rats. I am Ryan the Hockey Guy. In studio with me, the Athletic himself, Jesse Granger. Jesse, how you doing today?
He's wearing an athletic shirt.
He only ever wears athletic apparel. That's it.
Why not? It's the best apparel to wear.
They just send that to you, right?
I think this shirt I actually got from headquarters when I was in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Between games one and two in San Jose when the Golden Knights were up there, I made the drive up to San Francisco and got to see HQ, so that's where I got this shirt.
I'm just going to go on a tangent right now. Like, do you own any athletic gear that you paid for yourself?
No.
Of course not. Come on. What's the care package like? I'm curious.
Oh, you get like a swag pack when you first get hired. It was like a couple t-shirts, a hoodie, and a beanie and a hat.
Do they have to see the first draft of Why I Joined the Athletic before they send it to you?
We don't do Why I Joined the Athletic anymore. When I joined, it was already past that.
It's been, what, two years? You've already gotten rid of your, like, the quintessential athletic piece?
I feel like when the Athletic first started and guys were jumping ship from ESPN and these major companies to some company that no one had ever heard of, it was needed. Like, what is this thing? Why are you leaving established companies for it? So they had to write Why I Joined the Athletic. At this point, it's pretty obvious. It's because they're awesome.
Because they pay.
Yeah. I mean, that's that also is a perk, too.
And they don't pay an exposure.
And they send you swag.
Yeah, they send you swag.
You get to wear it everywhere.
It's just the best company of all time.
If there's one piece of swag that you have that I want, it's the Athletic hoodie.
It's fantastic. It is. It's good.
Is it as soft and comfortable as it looks?
It is. It's. I think it's like Under Armour, too.
Can I try it on one day?
You can.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
So that took a turn.
I'm waiting for the video podcast of Ryan tries on Jesse's hoodie.
It's like those people have YouTube videos where they unbox things.
Yeah.
I don't know why anyone would want to watch that, but there's things, these people get millions of views where you just unbox an item. This will be our thing. Ryan trying on my clothes.
I'm all for it. It sounds great. We should get Frank in on it too.
Just my
suggestion.
Okay.
All right. So game two of the Stanley Cup final happened 2 days ago on Wednesday. Game three is not until tomorrow because the NHL makes a ton of sense. What were kind of your initial impressions after game two, St. Louis getting even in the series, finally winning a Stanley Cup final game? Do you walk away after that game thinking any differently about the trajectory of the series?
It makes me worry a little more about Tuukka Rask because after game one, I remember I was in here saying, if you're a Bruins fan, you feel great because he played not very good in game one and you still won. And it's like, okay, well, he's probably going to get back to the Tuukka Rask that we've seen in this playoffs, which has been the best goalie in the league. And in game two, he was worse. So that's not good. I think Binnington has outplayed him by a pretty wide margin in these first two games, and that was in Boston, and now you're going to St. Louis, so I'm a little worried.
And it's interesting you talk about Jordan Binnington outplaying Tuukka Rask, because I don't feel like Jordan Binnington has been particularly good. Like, he's been serviceable, he's come up with saves when he's needed to, but like, there hasn't been that Jordan Binnington taking over a game and really being the difference maker. Now, there was that save on Pastrnak right at the end of regulation, but I don't know that that was so much Jordan Binnington coming up with a miraculous save as Jordan Binnington being in the right place at the right time and making himself big in that situation. You give David Pastrnak that shot 10 more times, he probably scores 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's the two goalies in this series are playing two different types of games because Tuukka Rask isn't getting the volume, And that's tough sometimes. Like, sometimes that's harder. You almost want more volume because it's tough to stay in the game. And when the Blues are getting chances, they're high-danger chances, and he hasn't stopped them. Whereas Binnington's making way more saves because Boston's spending most of the game in his zone. And, yeah, he hasn't had a dominant performance standing on his head. They can't get anything past him. He's let it by a couple goals in each game. But he's making a lot more big saves than Tuukka Rask is. And it just feels like Boston has been the better team at everywhere except for in net. And Binning, to me, in that overtime, the Blues dominated. But I think Boston was the better team for most of that game, and Binnington was just better.
I think you need more out of Brad Marchand. You need more out of Patrice Bergeron, more out of David Pastrnak. I mean, they have not been very good. And Marchand kind of took the task on that. He said, I could be a lot better. I need to be a lot better. I think he will, but kind of one of the big takeaways for me was Pat Maroon. Now, Pat Maroon had that shift that led to the first goal of the game for St. Louis, and it's a short side goal. If Tuukka Rask gets flushed with the post, probably doesn't go in, even though there's a deflection on it. But that shift from Pat Maroon, and then how he's able to get under Brad Marchand's skin, how he's able to get under the Bruins' skin, I think it's interesting to see how that's going to develop over the course of the next four or five games.
Yeah, I still think the Bruins win this series. I think they're the better team. It's 1-1 going back to St. Louis. The Blues have not played particularly well at home in the playoffs. They've won most of their big games during this run on the road, so I don't think this is Boston's in trouble going to St. Louis tied 1-1. I think it's going to be a close series. I would still take Boston in six probably, but I'm more worried about it than I was before after game one, because Tuukka Rask has not been the same guy that he was before this run.
Tuukka Rask was .900 in game one. He was .919 in game two save percentage. So he had a better save percentage statistically in game two and might have been worse than he was in game one.
Yeah, and I don't want to make it sound like he's been horrible.
He was 9-4-1 coming in. So he's been worse than he has been throughout this run, and that's troublesome if you're the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, and you can turn it around. I mean, we saw firsthand Martin Jones was a sieve for a couple games. And then
that's putting it nicely.
And then all of a sudden, he was single-handedly losing the Sharks games. Like, the Sharks were outplaying the Golden Knights, and he was just so bad they couldn't overcome it. Then all of a sudden, he turned it on, and he was single-handedly winning them games. So there's nothing saying Rask can't go to St. Louis and be awesome, but it's a little worrisome that it's now been two games into this series, and maybe just the offense the Blues run bothers him.
I think there's a lot of movement to what they do. They really like to move the puck in the zone, play with different angles, and you get a goalie moving, I don't care how they good, there are going to be holes, there are going to be openings, and the Blues, I think, are talented enough to find those. And everyone had Carl Gunnarsson with the game.
Yeah, of course.
You heard the story, right, about Gunnarsson telling Craig Berube?
Yep.
Okay, good. So Carl Gunnarsson hits the post right toward the end of regulation, and between the third period and the overtime period, Carl Gunnarsson, in the restroom, says to Craig Berube, I just need one more chance. And he buried it. Called a shot. It's fantastic.
I'm not a fan of talking to people in the bathroom together. Like,
it's a weird
dynamic. Let's
wait
until we get out of the bathroom. And then
I don't remember who had asked, but somebody had asked Alex Pietrangelo, like, hey, is it common for Craig Berube to, like, stand next to you guys while you're doing your business? And Pietrangelo's like, well, there's only so many toilets. So what are we supposed to do here?
This is a logistics issue.
Like, that's the type of journalism and questioning that's happening in the Stanley Cup final. It's fantastic.
Well, we've all been in the visiting locker rooms, and for the most part, they are tiny.
Yeah, they're
like
small.
Unbelievably small. When, especially like the older the building, the smaller it is. T-Mobile's road locker room is massive.
Yeah.
But that's because it's brand new. I can remember in the Cup final, the Washington Capitals road locker room is smaller than this studio, and it's 20 players and 50 media members just interviewing each other.
Smells,
it's ridiculous.
Smells fantastic.
Phenomenal.
So we're going to switch gears here a little bit, and we're going to talk about the Chicago Wolves, and specifically right now, Rocky Thompson. Chicago Wolves go to Charlotte to play the Charlotte Checkers. Game one of the Calder Cup final is going to be on Saturday. There are three potential back-to-backs in this series because it's the AHL. Why not, right? You got to be around this team for a little bit in the conference final in San Diego. You wrote a great piece on The Athletic about Rocky Thompson and kind of his maturation process from player to coach and how that has really helped develop some of the Golden Knights. So, Rocky Thompson, just give me your takeaways from spending a little bit of time with him.
Yeah, I mean, the main point of the piece to me was just to get his name out there. I think Rocky Thompson, maybe not right now, because every team has filled their void except for the Anaheim Ducks, and I don't expect the Anaheim Ducks to hire Rocky Thompson. They've got a phenomenal coach in their AHL system in Dallas Eakins that I think could be the guy. But next offseason, we've seen the turnover in coaches in the NHL. It seems a third of the league fires its coach every year. I think Rocky Thompson's going to be on the top of a lot of NHL teams' interview boards next offseason. It's because, one, he's been phenomenal coaching this team to win games, which, if you look at the list of Calder Cup champion coaches, it's the success rate has been amazing. John Cooper, who's obviously built Tampa into a powerhouse. Barry Trotz, who's probably going to win Coach of the Year, both won the Calder Cup before their NHL gigs. And Rocky Thompson has done such a good job, but then he's also done a good job of developing the players, which is the number one job of an AHL coach, over winning. And he's done a great job with both. And to me, the thing that was interesting with Rocky is, as a player, he was a psychopath, right? Like, there's no other way to put it. Like, he was a crazy person.
He's a fighter.
He only played a handful of games in the NHL. Most of his games were in the AHL, where he had, I think, 2,000 penalty minutes. I think he had over 90 fights in both NHL and AHL combined,
which is accurate.
Yeah, like more than goals. Like, he got in more fights than he did score goals. All Rocky did was just beat the hell out of people.
Yeah.
And then he transitions to a coach, and he's just completely different. And he was on Craig Custance of The Athletic, his podcast, and talked about how he was basically playing a role that whole time. I don't know how much I buy that. I think Rocky was crazy, and he's since wisened up. But he says he was playing a role back when he was a player, and it was almost a character. But if you're around Rocky now, super calm, collected, very measured. He is the calming presence on that bench. I even talked to Keegan Kolesar. I was like, what surprised you most about Rocky as a coach? And he goes, well, he doesn't swear. And after watching him as a player and seeing how he was, it was amazing to me that he doesn't swear, and he's just so calm all the time.
Could it be like the Mike Tyson thing, where he got concussed into a better personality?
I don't think so. Rocky actually has some brain cells left.
Okay.
So that's a good theory. But yeah, no, so you take this guy who was a crazy person as a player. He's the exact opposite as a coach. He won't swear anymore. I asked Rocky, did you swear when you were a player, or were you like a crazy person that just wouldn't swear? He's like, oh, no, I used to swear. I just don't anymore.
He just doesn't anymore.
Yeah.
Well, we had Rocky on the Golden Knights Insider Show this week. And the interesting thing about Rocky, in just kind of talking to him overall about this playoff run, he talks about this team facing a lot of adversity. And it's not just that it's a team that's facing adversity when it comes to traditional AHL type situations, where you have players that play really well and then they get called up, a la Brandon Peary, and then they are lost to you. They are a player that factored into what you did really well early on in the season. All of a sudden, they are not available to you. You've got to fill a void there. But it's also the injuries. The injuries on this team have been massive, and there's been no drop off. Yeah. And I think Rocky deserves a lot of credit for getting guys to buy into a system, and he's getting the most out of them. And that's really, if you're looking at a coach and you're trying to evaluate whether or not they can be a good coach at the next level, can they get more out of certain players? Can they get players to play above their ability and do it consistently? And I think this run for the Chicago Wolves and what Rocky's been able to do answers that question pretty well. Yes, he can.
Yeah, I said it in the story. The best example of Rocky's just pure coaching ability is Keegan Kolesar. He had 7 goals in the first 42 games. Couldn't score. And Daniel Carr obviously won the league MVP in the AHL. He was pacing the Wolves. He was their best player. He goes down about midway through the season, and Keegan told me that Rocky called him into his office and told him, look, I want you to lead the team in shots on goal every game. That's what I want your focus to be, which is strange. That's not something you normally would hear from like a coach. Usually it's like, we want good shots, make the right decision. Yeah. He told him straight up, just shoot. I want you to lead the team in shots, and let's see what happens.
Green light.
He does. Exactly. Yeah. Gives him the green light for a basketball term. And all of a sudden, Kolesar, everything he put at the net went in. And during that stretch when Carr was out, Kolesar got put... He's normally a checking line type guy. He gets put into a scoring line role, and he scored, I think, 14 goals in 30 games, tripled his production, essentially.
Yeah.
And during that stretch when Carr was out, they almost didn't miss him because Kolesar basically just filled exactly what that... That's great coaching by Rocky Thompson.
The other thing, too, we had Cody Glass on yesterday, and one of the questions to Cody is, what has Rocky done for you? You look like you want to say something.
Oh, no, I was going to say, and where could they find that interview?
They can find it on lvsportsnetwork.com.
Thank you, buddy.
Or Spotify, or really anywhere that you can get iTunes, all the different places. But the
cross promotion.
Yeah, exactly. At Fox Sports, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. That all being said, Cody talked about being a playmaker. And he talked about Rocky challenging him when he first got there to shoot the puck a little bit more. And when you look at Cody Glass and what he's been able to do in this run, and you look at the game-winning goals, you have to have that mentality. And for a young player who has a lot of expectations on his shoulders, I think getting that message early, you are good enough to score, put pucks on the net, the playmaking will come outside of all of that. I think that is planting the seed at exactly the right time for Cody Glass.
Yeah, and that's the great side of Rocky as far as X's and O's go and as far as development goes. The other side is a huge part of being a coach in professional sports is just managing a room full of guys who make way more money than you do, right? I mean, maybe not in the AHL, but in the NHL for sure. And I went around to the Wolves and asked them for 3 days. I talked to as many guys as I could, and I asked them all, without leading them in any way, what makes Rocky a good coach? And the answer almost every single time was that he cares about his players more than any coach they've ever had. And when you have a coach that's like, yeah, and that's like the whole cliche, oh, we're a band of brothers, we care about each other, and like, how much does that really affect? But I think it does when all of them told me they've never had a professional coach in their life that cared that much about them. When they're injured, he's coming into the training room to make sure they're all right. When they're having tough stretches like Keegan Kolesar was, he pulls him aside and has conversations with him. And I think at the AHL level, you don't always get that. Especially, to me, it was the guys who aren't Nick Hague and Cody Glass. The guys who are probably never going to be NHL players that are going to finish their careers in the AHL. Rocky even impresses those guys with that.
So, kind of the big takeaway then is Rocky Thompson is an invaluable part of what is going well for the Golden Knights. How much longer is he going to be within the Golden Knights organization? Because it doesn't seem like it's going to be very long.
Yeah, that's the bad news. And that's with any organization. If you do things really well, those guys are going to get picked off. And it probably should have happened with Kelly McCrimmon. We thought the Golden Knights were going to lose Kelly McCrimmon. They found a way to keep him. I don't think there's a way to keep Rocky Thompson. He's probably going to take another gig either next offseason or shortly after.
I mean, couldn't you, in theory, make him the head coach and then make Gallant the director of coaching operations?
You technically could. I don't think Gerard Gallant would be thrilled with that.
I don't think it really works that way as far as coaching goes. We talked about it. We had kind of a brief chat, but we were looking at potential teams that might be interested in Rocky Thompson. And it's going to be a struggling team. It's going to be a team that needs to move on from their coach. And the two teams that immediately jumped off the page to me are the Columbus Blue Jackets because, well, John Tortorella has an expiration date, and he's quickly coming up on that.
What are your thoughts on John Tortorella? I can't really tell what you think about John Tortorella's coach.
I absolutely love John Tortorella, the soundbite. I don't think he's a very good hockey coach.
Yeah, that was my
like, I think
vibe.
He coaches really good teams to, like, bubble status and then has, like, a really good playoff series and then just cannot do anything after that. And this season was basically proof positive.
Is he like he can't adjust? Or
he doesn't make adjustments. He doesn't really
we're gonna play our game.
Yeah, he doesn't take time to develop players. You know, like whether or not you think Anthony Duclair can be a player or not be a player, calling him stupid and sitting him and playing him 18 seconds because he makes one mistake on his first shift of the game is a stupid way to coach. I just think it's a dumb way to coach.
Yeah, I mean, we always talk to the Golden Knights players about what makes Gallant a good coach, and they all talk about how when you make a mistake, he's throwing you right back out
there. Right, exactly.
And they all love that.
And then the other team is the Minnesota Wild. Because, one, I have no idea what the roster is going to look like next season. Two, Bruce Boudreau is not used to missing the playoffs. He did it last year. I just think that at some point, Bruce Boudreau and the Minnesota Wild are going to realize it's not working and they're going to part ways. It's just going to happen.
Both of those teams are kind of in this, are in similar situations because they've got talented rosters that aren't living up to expectations. We're not talking about the bottom of the barrel teams that are, that can't win. These are two teams that can win and the coaches just aren't producing playoff series wins. So I could absolutely see either of those guys getting fired.
And you talk about the rosters. We have no idea what the Columbus Blue Jackets are going to look like because Yarmo went all in and he's got a lot of UFAs and most of them are not coming back. When we come back, Bischoff's Briefs.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Jared!
Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Jared!
Briefs.
Underpants!
Jared!
Briefs.
Very well.
UNLV shoe deal with Nike expires today.
These are the wrong guys to ask. Do they?
Okay, wait.
Does Nike make ice skates?
Can we just talk about how great that edit was,
that was
for
phenomenal.
Jared Briefs?
That was phenomenal. Well done.
Is there anything that you'd like us to say? Can you feed us lines on this one?
No, I was. So it's an it. The deal expired. They were a Nike school, which apparently proved problematic because Nike may have been paying Brandon McCoy to attend, allegedly.
Or not problematic, depending on the way you look at it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they won what? Like, they didn't win a whole lot of
games. That's true. Yeah, they just didn't pay enough money.
Yeah, like return on investment on that was not great. No, I was just going to basically go, what athletic brands would you like to see sponsor UNLV?
The athletic hoodies is what I'd like to see. That's about
so
it.
So Under Armour is what you're saying.
Under Armour.
Under Armour is probably the most likely one, right? I mean, they like
it's
most of the schools
Nike
that aren't Nike
or
are Under Armour.
Yeah. Although I would be really, really excited for Puma.
Puma. That's like soccer, right? Like, that's more of a like European soccer thing.
You're a big Puma
be Under
guy?
No, I just you really just... like to say the word. They're out there in their Pumas.
Jesus.
What about New Balance?
That we did. I don't know how to politely put this.
This will be fun.
When Otzelberger's recruiting class was looking very gritty, we suggested New Balance as a
gritty,
very hardworking group.
Yeah,
that's something I can talk
fundamentals.
About.
Yeah, the
New Balance crew would just be. I think it's probably going to be Under Armour. Next brief. I don't know what else to say.
A Wolves defenseman is +3.
We are not going to speak the name of that Chicago Wolves defenseman.
It is someone that has gotten enough attention on this show particularly that we don't have to talk about him specifically.
Yeah, it's a great Wolves defensive group. They've got Nick Hague. They've got Zach Whitecloud. They've got Dylan Coughlin. They've got Zach Leslie. And then they've got this guy who's +3. He's been all right in the playoffs.
The best thing about this guy is that if Jimmy Schultz was available, he probably wouldn't be playing.
That could be true. There are a lot of good defensemen on that. When I went down to San Diego and watched the Wolves, he didn't stand out as much as Zach Whitecloud did, and he doesn't have the offensive upside that Nick Hague does, but he is probably the he makes the least mistakes of any defenseman in there, which Gerard Gallant, that's something he's looking for, so he does have a shot at training camp to see if he can make the roster.
He did actually make the roster out of camp,
yeah,
which is surprising to say the least, because we didn't necessarily expect that to happen this season. But he does have a chance. You mentioned not making mistakes. You mentioned the ability to kind of play with anybody, mm-hmm, really. He can mold his game to those things. And we've already talked about it enough, so let's go to the next one.
That one was to set up this one. Cody Glass is minus one.
Yeah, well, listen, Cody Glass, coming out of junior, he's getting some valuable playing time during this run for the Chicago Wolves, and he'll be a minus one. Like, that, it's fine. You're not looking at Cody Glass right now to be the best defensive forward on the team. You're looking at Cody Glass to be an offensive player. You're looking at him to put pucks in the back of the net. You're looking at him to be the difference maker in big game situations. And looking through some of his moments from this playoff run, I think you're getting what you need out of Cody Glass.
Yeah, this is a guy who goes from the Portland Winterhawks in the Western Hockey League playing against some 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds.
Children.
And he gets thrown into the AHL playoffs. He had like two games in the regular season, however many games in the regular season to acclimate. But his first professional hockey is in big-time situations, and he's got three game-winning goals, two of them in overtime. He's been phenomenal for him.
And he talked about overtime being the most fun for a hockey player. And that's always an interesting mindset, because when you are a fan and you're watching overtime, it is literally the worst thing. It sucks. If you and I'm not talking about like from a Golden Knights perspective. I'm saying if you have a dog in the fight, if you have a team,
yeah,
that you root for and they are in overtime, it is literally the worst feeling as a fan. But these players relish it. They love it. And that's the difference, I think, between game breakers and guys that are just kind of okay at what they do.
Yeah, and Glass has been so confident. Like, I talked to some of his teammates about what it was like to throw a guy from juniors into the mix. This guy hasn't played with you all year. Like, it's almost like, does he deserve to be on this run with us type thing? And every one of them couldn't say enough good things about Cody Glass and just his confidence right off the bat.
You said he had the it factor.
100%. Ooh. Yeah. I even said... His it factor
is
so...
Did Jesse snap his fingers when he said it? Like, he has it? It?
No.
No, no.
I think you took that to a different direction.
That was rough.
Yeah. He has the it factor so much so that even if he wasn't good at hockey, I think that he still would have got drafted in the first round. It's almost... His personality is almost so charismatic that he could have conned the Golden Knights into taking him with the sixth overall pick. So if Cody Glass ends up being a bust and he's terrible, this is why. You can't come out of a conversation with Cody Glass and not think, that guy
really
is awesome. I want him on my team.
Pulsar, Haig, and White Cloud have combined for 67 penalty minutes in the Calder Cup playoffs. What is going on in the AHL? It seems excessive.
It's a different league, you know. And when you watch the AHL, what you notice is there are some guys that have really good high-end talent that are here for a couple of months, and then they're going to the next level. And then you've got a bunch of guys that this is where they top out in terms of development. And that type of game that they play is typically along the boards, in the corners, in the trenches, and what ends up happening is you get guys taking liberties with some of the players that have the higher upside, and it's just a different game. It's a completely different game than the NHL. These are guys playing for what comes next, and they need to stand out any way that they can, penalty minutes included.
Yeah, it's ugly hockey. I think I might have said this earlier in the week, but
I was trying to be diplomatic.
That's why I looked it up. Was
the
because
AHL.
You said, "Oh God, this is hard to watch."
Yeah, it's ugly. I mean, it's dump and chase and beat the hell out of each other. That's what the AHL is, and it makes it hard. Like, I go in caring about, like, I do not care if the Chicago Wolves win or lose this game. It makes no difference to me. All I'm looking for is individual scouting reports. Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean, when I'm watching Golden Knights games, I'm not rooting for the Golden Knights, but if they win or lose has an impact on my story. Whereas the Chicago Wolves, I'm going to write a story about Cody Glass and his development. Doesn't matter if they win or lose. He could be good and everyone else is terrible, and I don't care. All I care about is that. it's tough to find individual breakout performances in the AHL because it's not a pretty league. There aren't the offensively skilled, dazzling plays that you see in the NHL. Cody Glass is playing with guys who are grinders, and some of those skills don't stand out in the AHL because the hockey is just so unbelievably hideous.
And I think kind of the main takeaway is you're not looking for a Cody Glass or a player that you are trying to see, can they take the next step? You're not looking for them to necessarily be great all game. You're looking for two or three plays where they don't have seven guys on them at one time, grinding them into the boards. You have open ice, and you saw it when Cody Glass scored on that penalty shot goal. Like, there's skill there, and it's a big moment. It is a big, big situation, and he came through.
And then you also get to see, like you said, guys who top out in the AHL, this is the highest they'll ever go, are headhunting.
Yes, 100%.
And Cody Glass took a monster elbow to the face that rattled his head off the boards, and he went down. And it, honestly, when it happened, it was the first game. I was there for three games. He was on the ice not moving, and I'm thinking, great, that's all we're going to see of him. I hope he's healthy for training camp. And he went into the locker room, got concussion protocol, came right back, played great in the third period. That's something that he goes from playing with kids to, can he play in the NHL? That's a great sign.
When it comes to headhunters and when it comes to Cody Glass, do you try to maybe turn the temperature up a little bit and get him cooked a little bit faster so that that's not a situation you run into where Cody Glass gets hurt and he's not available to you?
Yeah, I actually had a good conversation with Kelly McCrimmon yesterday, and he mentioned something interesting to me. He said, this is almost like an extra year of development for Cody Glass because he spent his entire season with the Portland Winterhawks. Usually, you're in junior all year and that's it. Season's over. And then next year, you get a year in the AHL. And then the year after that, you're in the NHL. McCrimmon basically said, this is almost like two seasons in one. This playoff run with the Wolves is almost like an AHL year for him. So that's huge for his development. He's not saying he's making the team out of camp, but I think he's certainly making it. It's a real possibility.
During his final days with the Buffalo Bills, Richie Incognito needed extra security. They hired extra security guards so that they would just, like, keep Richie from doing Richie things.
Trying to cut people's heads off and breaking things at funeral homes and bullying teammates. God. Just doing things that will fit in perfectly with the Oakland Raiders.
Sounds like a peach.
What a signing.
You've got a brief for
us. Yes, you have
a brief. Okay, so The Athletic's Pierre LeBrun is reporting that the Toronto Maple Leafs and Los Angeles Kings are in talks to possibly trade Patrick Marleau to the Kings. So the Kings are terrible. They're one of, if not the worst teams in the NHL, and they've decided to rebuild by getting as old as humanly possible.
Get old, stay old.
The biggest takeaway after the Toronto Maple Leafs lost again to the Boston Bruins in Game 7, again, was the knowledge that Patrick Marleau uses a two-piece stick. Okay.
Like, does it screw together?
You have to put glue on the wooden part of the stick and put it into the shaft. It's ridiculous. It is outdated. It's, like, no wonder the guy can't score. No wonder he's not the type of player that he used to be. Like, get with the times. It's not going to make you scored 17 goals in this league, but please, you're embarrassing yourself a little bit. And let's be honest, the LA Kings organization, for whatever reason, likes to go after old, past their prime scorers that can't play anymore.
Yeah.
See Ilya Kovalchuk.
Yeah, the thing with Kovalchuk, I won't blame him as much on Kovalchuk, even though I said that was going to be a disaster from the beginning and ended up being right, is when they signed Kovalchuk,
it 100% yeah. was.
When they signed Kovalchuk, they still thought their window was open, though. They had just went to the playoffs. They got swept by the Golden Knights, but all four of those games were close. In their mind, it was, we just need a score. We need some speed, and we'll take that next step. But now, you were the worst team in hockey. Why would you bring in a 39-year-old Patrick Marleau? It makes no sense.
Because Todd McClellan likes him.
That's
the only connection that I can think of that makes any sense. And just to defend Kovalchuk a little bit, I'm not going to do it because I think you're right. It was an experiment gone wrong, and it was doomed to fail from the beginning. Willie DeJardine did not help that situation. By sitting there saying, I know I've got a guy that can score, and up until the point where I became coach, he was scoring not the way you'd like him to, but he was still finding the back of the net. What am I going to do? I'm going to play him 6 minutes a night on the fourth line with guys that cannot play, and then I'm going to say, yeah, I'm not putting him in the best situation to succeed, but oh well.
Yeah, I mean, it was a disaster by everyone, but yes. The Kings seem to not understand how to rebuild.
No, not at all. Not at all. And bringing in a Patrick Marleau would suggest that this team is no closer to figuring it out than they were when they were trying to unload Jake Muzzin, when there were talks about unloading Jonathan Quick. When you look at Jeff Carter and you say, if we can get out from under that contract, it would be fantastic. There's no faith right now in Los Angeles that the Brain Trust can figure out a way to get out of the mess that the contracts have put them in, while also improving the product on the ice. I think they are a lost cause for probably the next 5 to 10 years.
How big of a, and this is me being, might be me transitioning slightly to dumb questions, but how big of a name is this? Like, is this going to affect season tickets?
No,
because, okay. Yeah, I mean, he...
No, it's not
he,
getting a star past his prime guy, to just be like, okay, we got to put people in the stands.
Like, it's not the same...
It's your last chance to see him.
It's not the same as acquiring, say, a 38-year-old Sidney Crosby. It's not the same as acquiring a 38-year-old Alex Ovechkin, where, like, you can say, all right, it's his farewell tour. He wants to do something a little bit different. He's still going to be really, really, really good, but... he's way past his prime, and we know that.
Yeah, and also, this player, all of his star years were playing for the upstate rival San Jose Sharks. So Kings fans in general probably hate Patrick Marleau.
It's also a guy, rightly or wrongly, who was stripped of the captaincy because the San Jose Sharks continued to fail in the postseason. It was given to Joe Thornton, who was then stripped of the captaincy because the San Jose Sharks continued to fail in the offseason, in the postseason, and then given to Joe Pavelski. And it hasn't been stripped of him yet because, well, they've made it to a Stanley Cup final under his watch and failed in the postseason.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely not going to sell season tickets.
When we come back, we're going to talk some more prospects, and Jared's going to ask us stupid questions.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Token on the track.
Here goes the White Cloud. Hag will release. Yes! They score! Curtis McKenzie has broken the deadlock. The Wolves are attacking now. Reinhardt's wrist. Yes! They score! Keegan Kolesar with the redirect. White Cloud flips it up ice. It gets to center, and McKenzie will drive in. McKenzie shoots. Yes! Curtis McKenzie restores a 2-goal lead for the Wolves with his team-leading eight.
All right, so Jesse Granger, we are back here on Technically Rink Rats, ESPN 100. I don't even know.
0.9.
Yeah. 101. Is it 101.9?
No, it's 100.9.
100.
1100 a.m.
1100 a.m.
Which one of 100. Us works here?
Hey, man. I'm on the other side of the building. Tyler asked me to do this. He should have known better. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, Tyler also doesn't know when your show's on.
Yeah,
on
exactly. Fox. It might even be a bit. You don't know. Here's the deal. You spent time in San Diego, and you and I have had conversations about your time there, and the biggest question I have for you is, when you do your projections for next season with the Golden Knights and you project out which prospects may or may not make the team out of camp, do you feel differently now about some of the projections you made?
I do. To me, the biggest takeaway was, so obviously the number one focus going into camp, obviously there's the Cody Glass, can he make the team, but the biggest thing is we've got like four or five defensemen down there who have all proven they're pretty good and they could be on the verge of making this team, and there's probably only going to be one, maybe two spots open for those guys, and that's Nick Hague, Zach Whitecloud, Dylan Coughlin, the man who must not be named, and Jimmy Schultz, who's not in the AHL right now, but he's obviously also going to be competing for those spots. I had Nick Hague as a significant favorite amongst those guys because his ceiling is obviously the highest, and I still believe that. He's not as ready as I thought he was. His spacing wasn't as good, and for those that aren't super into hockey, spacing is the guy's coming into the blue line with speed. As a defenseman, you've got to be far enough away to where he can't beat you, can't skate behind you and get to the goalie, but you also can't be so far away that he's got time and space to shoot through you, through your screen at the goalie. Hague usually gets stuck one side or the other on the wrong end of that, and it's gotten better, but it's still not great. Whereas Zach Whitecloud, his spacing is unbelievable. And prior to going down to San Diego, I always said Zach Whitecloud is a young Derek England, that type of guy. I've completely changed that. I think he's closer to a young Nate Schmidt than he is to a young Derek England. And I don't mean he's going to be Nate Schmidt, because Nate Schmidt's a number one defenseman. I don't think Zach Whitecloud will ever be a number one defenseman on an NHL team. I don't think he's that good. But I think he's that style. His skating is phenomenal. He stays in the right positions, and he uses his feet to defend, not his stick.
When talking about Whitecloud specifically, you talk about Nate Schmidt. Another guy that pops up into my mind is Braden McNabb. And not necessarily that McNabb and Schmidt are close in terms of where they're at as players, but if Whitecloud continues to develop the way that you have seen him take strides this year, could Whitecloud eventually be a Braden McNabb type, in that you can put a more offensively minded defenseman with him, a la Shea Theodore, and you're going to get more out of Whitecloud and that type of pairing than you would out of a Braden McNabb, more of a stay-at-home guy, more of a guy that's just going to continue to be in the right position at all times and just not make mistakes?
Yeah, the thing about Whitecloud is I think he can be either. I think if you pair him with Braden McNabb, he can be more offensive. And he showed me that, and you heard these in the clips coming back. Almost all of them had Zach Whitecloud's name in it. He's more offensive than I think we give him credit for. Rocky Thompson put him on that top power play unit about halfway through the season, and his numbers skyrocketed after that. His numbers are very comparable to Nick Hague and Brännström offensively, especially for a guy who's not really known for his offense. So I think he can be either. You can also put him with a Shea Theodore, and he'll be the stay-at-home guy, and he's always in good position. I don't think Whitecloud's ever going to be great at anything, but I think he's going to be really good at most things, which is, I mean, he's never going to be Shea Theodore offensively. He's never going to be a just shutdown defenseman. I think he's really good at a lot of things, and he can find a spot in the NHL and play for 10 years.
I think what's interesting about you saying that is simply the fact that in this situation, not being good at, like, not being really, really good at anything in particular is going to help him, because that's what Gerard Gallant's looking for. He's looking for a defenseman that he can plug and play in multiple different situations and get the most out of that player and the paired player with him. Like, that's what I think Gerard Gallant's looking for. He's not looking for the next Eric Brännström or the next Erik Karlsson or the next player that's really, really good offensively and a liability in their own end. He's looking for someone that's well-rounded.
Yeah, so my takeaway, and it'll probably change with rookie camp here at the end of this month, but right now I think Whitecloud is the best defenseman of the bunch right now.
Is Jimmy Schult kind of a big X factor for you, just because you haven't seen a ton of him? You don't really know where he is in terms of his development right now.
Yeah, he was obviously way better than Whitecloud in college, so that makes you think maybe he's a more talented version of Whitecloud, but I just haven't seen enough to. I mean, he was good in the one game he played, but there's not much to take away from that, so he is an X factor. I don't know where he fits into the situation yet.
Who is the most Drake like player in the NHL? Like a guy that you'd go, he's never been punched in the face.
Wow. Most Drake-like player.
Guy that's never been punched in the face.
Why do you describe Drake as never being punched in the face?
Have you seen him?
Yeah, he's the definition of a guy who's never been punched in the face. Like
that needs to be punched in the face?
I think every man just needs to be punched in the face.
Okay,
that's,
all right.
That's a part of life.
Can we extend it to not just the NHL, but all people that, in theory, cover the NHL?
Okay,
is this
going to
be Pierre Maguire?
No. Pierre Maguire is a really, really good one.
I thought that's where you're going.
But I'm not going there. Tyler Bischoff.
That's fair.
Tyler Bischoff is to the Lights FC what Drake is to the Toronto Raptors.
That is fair. Technically could be a person that is and in brand ambassador.
Tyler, to me, is the physical embodiment of never been punched in the face, ever.
Yeah, Tyler, like Drake, thinks he's part of the Raptors. I think Tyler thinks he's part of the Lights.
He practiced
with them. He took some shots as a goalie. I think Tyler is the Drake of the Las Vegas Lights.
He took credit for the Lights winning games and scoring goals. Like, this guy is as delusional as they come.
He's absolutely Drake.
Yep.
All right. Who is the NHL player that you go, oh, honey, you can't skate?
I'm not touching this one.
I mean, they can all skate. I'm trying to think.
You have to put it in.
Yeah, right, yeah, you know what? Relatively. I am going to take this one. Roman Polak.
It's tough to watch him skate. It's hard to watch. Next.
you're not picking one?
No, that's him.
You're going with Roman Polak.
You nailed it.
It's tough to watch.
If you had to guess, are Canadians more excited to just be watching playoff hockey, or the fact that the Raptors are actually doing something meaningful in the playoffs?
I think Canadians are all in on the Raptors right now. I don't think they care at all about the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, it's cool to see. Like, people like to hate on everything on Twitter. It's why they're there. Just let them have fun. Like, yeah, most of the people in Canada that are jumping on the Raptors bandwagon probably didn't watch many games in the regular season, but it's fun, and their team is finally doing something. The Leafs haven't won since I've been alive, and it's cool to see what's happening in Canada. And maybe if the Raptors, maybe if they win, maybe if they don't, either way, maybe what's happening with hockey here in Vegas can happen with basketball in Canada. It'd be cool.
All right.
Yeah, I don't think they care at all about hockey right now.
Yeah, I don't think they do either, especially because it's Boston.
Of course. Should have been the Leafs.
Yeah.
That's the narrative. A wasted season for Toronto.
Do you guys overcook your prospects?
I would cook them the right amount, but if there is a player that I think can be a difference maker, I don't care if he makes mistakes. I want him to play for me.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
No. It's not now.
Because this
organization,
the Golden Knights organization, loves to take the slow approach, mainly George McPhee. But yeah, I mean, I would like to see someone like Nick Hague take his lumps in the NHL and try to reach the potential that he has over a guy like Nick Holden, who's going to be what you know he's going to be.
I would have rather they gone with overseasoned or underseasoned than overcooked or undercooked. It's just a little aggressive.
Yeah, but you can season something in like 3 seconds. I just sprinkle salt on it and it's seasoned. Or Creole seasoning,
it's
seasoned. Cooking takes time. Like the whole point. That's the whole point of the analogy is the time it takes.
It's very aggressive. I don't like it.
Cody Glass seems like he is cooked enough. What do you think?
Cody Glass will be a Golden Knight. The Athletic said it.
You suck, Tyler.